Thank you for the invitation to talk about my work with my students. So since this is a conference about the realistic theories of correlation electron materials, we try to present you some what we call realistic methods based on local density approximation and going beyond by using the called GW approximations. The method is based on the PEW method, so the periodically mounted wave method, which I'm going to briefly introduce. So this work was done with my student Sébastien Lebègue and Brice Arnaud. And the computer time was provided by the CNES at Montpellier on the IBM SP3. As I said, first I will try to introduce this new method based on work of Peter Brockel. And we compare the reliability of this method by comparing to all the calculation using full potential LMTO. And then I discuss the band gap problems, of course, because we use this method for doing semiconductor and insulator. So this is actually the aim to describe the excited states using going beyond the local density, which is actually one of the most successful theory on predicting the ground state of materials, if not the first successful method. And then, of course, if you want to go beyond a ground state property to describe excited state, where basically whenever you do an experiment, you excite the crystal, then you would like to do some quasi-particle based on some approximation beyond local density approximation. Then I will show you that we can apply this method to do the excited state of insulator and semiconductor. And if I have time, I can show you how we can use it to describe the correlation effect and the optical spectra. So basically, the PEW method is just one of the methods that actually likes a lot the plane waves. Of course, some people like the plane waves in a way that they actually approximate their true potential by what we call pseudo-potential. So the plane waves, why it's nice? Because there is this FFT. The FFT basically go log n instead of n squared. So people, based on this, because if you are using plane waves, you end up calculating matrix elements just by using fast Fourier transforms. So then the PEW, noticing that, of course, that plane waves are good and cheap and easy to use, then one way is to do that is to say, the Kohn-Sham orbitals, I can describe them by plane waves. But of course, this is not enough because on the crystal, you have atoms and with deep potential close to the atom. Therefore, you will say, okay, I can use the plane waves, but I have to handle this part of the atoms by something else. So you say, I'm going to use the plane waves everywhere to describe this potential shallow, and somewhere, when I get too close to the atoms, I'm going to use an expansion into partial waves. Then you are double counting, because then these plane waves are going everywhere, and you have to subtract that part inside those small spheres. So you just would like to say, is there a way, actually, of removing these plane waves by projection? This is why we call it the projected augmented wave. So you remove, basically, the part of the plane waves that enter inside some region close to the atoms. And this is a very good justification, because if you look into the true potential of silicon, for example, you will see that the atoms, they have this deep 1 over r potential, but when we get out of the atoms, this is the 1001 plane, and you see that the atoms, they have this deep potential, and everywhere else is flat. This is the pseudo potential corresponding to this true potential. So you see that this is a very good, nice way of doing things, and then you can exploit, let I show you later how to exploit the FFT to use to calculate matrix elements. Basically, this is, I go fast, I mean, here, because as I said, I mean, you have the Kohn-Sham orbital, you want like plane waves, you add this partial wave combination, and you subtract this pseudo wave combination. That, in principle, should cancel this one. But in reality, you cannot cancel it because you need really a complete basis set here. But you don't care, because all you want to do is subtract out the low-lying states, like SPD and so on. But let the other one be described by plane wave as well, because they are very extended. And if you have a very extended orbital, plane waves are very good at that. So basically what you are going to do, you subtract the low-lying states, and you basically, the upper ones, the very high in energy, you just keep them. To do that, well, we introduce projector, but this is very technical. You just introduce projector, and those projectors should be orthogonal to these pseudo waves, and there you require that the true pseudo waves and the partial pseudo potential waves are equal beyond this region of space. So if you get out of the potential where it's deep, those potential with those function will be exactly the same. But by requiring that, you see exactly here that these two guys will cancel out once you are outside the spheres, and inside the spheres, this one try to cancel that one. And then you have a very nice, smooth function that you can use to describe the crystal. The nice thing about that is just basically, whenever you calculate an operator, you basically calculate these kind of integrals with the operator inside the sphere that you add and subtract, and then you use a plane wave, basically, to do FFTs. Fast Fourier transform are done nicely in this way, and I'll show you, this is just continuation. So this is just to show you in picture how they look like. You see that this is the nodal wave function, which is close to the atom, and you can see for them 3s orbital of silicon. You can see that they are, you have nodes. With the pseudo partial wave, which is red here, it comes smoothly inside because it's actually canceled the plane waves. So it has to be smooth, like plane waves, inside when you do a combination of those. And this is the projector that actually projects out into the zone. And you see here the zero is here. So this part until here, you are projecting inside. If this is the same thing for 3Ps, you see the 3Ps, and this is the pseudo wave, and that's the projector. Okay, now if you want to calculate, as I said, an operator, you see that you are basically dealing with plane waves here, because this is just a combination of plane waves that you get. So basically to calculate an operator, this is easy, and you use fast Fourier transform. All you have to do is basically calculate these objects, and those are easy to calculate, because they're just a normal radial integral you can calculate by any integration, a numerical integration routine. Basically, those coefficients that you get in front, they are basically the projector applied to these waves that you also you can calculate once, because you can use it for any operator and doesn't depend on the operator. You can calculate, you project basically plane waves into this projector that projects this out. You get this quantity, and that's all. I mean, you take the combination of those and you put them there, and you have your cheaply your operator. That's why this method is very successful, and actually I think is one among the best to deal with the LDA problem. So the same density of state you can do, like as I said, I mean you calculate, but you know this is the pseudo wave calculated by Fourier transform, and this the inside, the true inside the atoms, and you subtract out some pseudo partial density that cancel that one. And then, of course, this is the core correction, the core additional term that also is calculated the same way. Total energy is the same. I'm going to, is exactly the same way. You can actually have it a free contribution. This is pseudo energy E1 minus E1 tilde. So I'm not going to dwell. The Hamiltonian is the same. You can from your functional minimize the total energy with respect to the variational parameters, and you suck the Hamiltonian out. You see, it has this pseudo potential that I showed you for silicon, the smooth part, and you have also one term with the potential which deals with the 1 over R potential and exchange correlation and so on. See then now here the comparison, you can see that LMTO, full potential with all the glory details, gives you silicon and gallium arsenide dielectric function. We calculate with the PW method and comes exactly on top of each other. And this method is very cheap compared to that one. I think there is actually a factor of 5-6 difference between those two methods. So it's really nice to calculate. Now, when you want to do now the band gap problem or the excited state of semiconductor in general, you see yourself that using Kohn-Sham equations, and then you want to solve for this exchange correlation potential. You discover, of course, that if you know it a long time ago, that all these band gaps actually are underestimated. This is the calculated band gap, this is experimental band gap, and in principle, if they are exactly the same, they fall on this red line. You see that they are completely underestimated by the Kohn-Sham equations. What to do? So we know, since a long time already now, that there is this discontinuity problem because the true quasi-particle or the gap problem is the difference between the ionization and the affinity. Whereas LDA gives you basically a Kohn-Sham gap, which has suffered from what Hardy-Gross told us, the discontinuity problem. So now to go beyond that is very difficult. I mean, within just the one electron theory. So people tried total exact exchange and so on to fix the gap problem, but you still don't know what's the part of the correlation that actually has this discontinuity, how it's going to affect the gap. So they basically, you don't know what you're doing. So if you go and do Hartree-Fock calculation, now there is no screening of the potential. LDA, we have some kind of screening that we don't know because it's a theory of total energy. So if you go to do Hartree-Fock, you find yourself completely overestimated the gap. We will say later how to get the Hartree-Fock in a simple way. So basically, all the band gap and all the energies, they become much higher than experimental results. Now, the thing what to do is to do the GW of Hedin. So basically, if you look to Kohn-Sham equation and you look to the quasi-particle equation, what do you see? They are very similar. But the only difference is here the self-energy is non-local. Here it's local. Here it's time-dependent. Here it's not. So basically, you can say, in another way, you can view the Kohn-Sham equations as a very approximate quasi-particle equation by saying, look, I mean, if I take the exchange correlation, I just put delta RR prime, and I put delta T, or I average out over time, I can get a Kohn-Sham equation. It turns out, if you do that, then everything comes right. I mean, the low-lying state, I mean, for semiconductor, you get correctly valence state and so on. So that means that's a very not bad approximation. But the only thing, as I said, it suffers from this gap problem. So next step, what you want to do is actually you want to calculate sigma within this GW of Hedin. So you like to use a potential which is non-local and which is screened by the dielectric function of the system. So basically now the idea, how do we calculate this self-energy, which is depend on R prime and depends on omega and omega space. So basically, one end up trying to see how we calculate this object. The way we do it here is just, if you have any two-point function which has a translation symmetry of the lattice, you can always write it in this generalized Fourier transform. Why do we do it this way? Because we like plane waves. Plane waves are nice, and we use them a lot. So you get this term here, the reciprocal space. And if you plug this form for W, for G, and for V, epsilon minus 1, and W, V is just 1 over Q plus G squared, sum over this. And you put them inside, you get this. You get a reciprocal space that W, GG prime, is just the inverse of the dielectric function, GG prime, multiplied by the potential. Here we are using G prime because we just symmetrize the problem. Inside, this dielectric function is symmetrized, and 1 over Q plus G squared is symmetrized here. So to have G prime here and G, you have a symmetric function. So what do we do with this screened potential? We use the LDA Green's function. The LDA Green's function, basically, you have this Kohn-Sham orbital here you have to use. This is also what we use, I mean, we are doing that now for example, for DMFT. We just have to project the Green's function into some local orbitals. You just you project into an atom which is correlated, you can get a Green's function for the correlated atom. And then you can solve the Dyson equation with this. So, so this is LDA. We start from LDA. And this is, we calculated, actually, I will show you different ways of doing this to calculate actually this self-energy, because we see that we can use a plasmon pole approximation so that we can integrate analytically correctly this one, or we can integrate it numerically in different ways along the imaginary axis, or we can do calculate over some contours that takes out the pole. And if we do imaginary axis, then you have to continue to the real axis using some PaDe approximation. So what we do? So if we we need a lot of bands, actually, like 200 or so. So the thing, what I didn't tell you, the PEW uses the Carpanello scheme. So what we do at the end, we construct our proper Hamiltonian and G-space. We calculate, we wrote a program to calculate the Hamiltonian, and we diagonalize it. We can get all the bands and everything. So actually, we can do as many bands as we want. This is why. Because in the Carpanello scheme, it's very expensive to do excited states. You need only the you need only the valence ones. And we do everything, so, because this converges badly with the number of excited state. You have to sum, as you see it in the self-infinite here, you have to sum over n, all the excited state, valence and conduction states. Basically, what you have, if you, I come back to this one. So basically, if you plug the Green's function here and the W written in this form, you see that you can calculate this. You form matrix element with the psi, the exponential, and another psi coming from this one. So you see that you get this matrix element here, mg prime mg, which has actually Konsham orbital k minus q, this exponential function, and another psi. So this is what you have to evaluate, and that use also fast Fourier transform to evaluate, as I told you, how to calculate a single local operator. Basically, what you have to do, then you have to end up with this integral here. This B function is an integral over this screened Coulomb potential and reciprocal space, and with this denominator like this. So one way you can do it is, as I told you before, if you take the dielectric function as a plasmon pole, you can analytically integrate. And then the other possibility is to calculate the self-energy. You can do it for frequency, imaginary frequencies, and you can integrate it along the imaginary axis, and then analytically continue to the real axis. The other way is to calculate it with the residue, and then you calculate this integral, and then you add the residue. So there are three ways, and we did them all. Basically, here, we use perturbation theory. If you see in the quasi-particle equation, you can here you can basically add Vxc and subtract Vxc, and you say that this term, sigma minus Vxc, is small, and I can use perturbation theory. This is what we use. So this is, if you use perturbation theory, then basically you say the quasi-particle is just the LDA. I mean, you solve without this perturbation, and you add this perturbation at the first order. But now there is a problem, because, I mean, this PEW for the moment uses frozen core approximation, and we are not happy to calculate the Green's function for the whole states, for the core and valence states. So what we do is we just treat the valence states. We calculate the Green's function only for the valence and conduction states. Therefore, here, we subtract out only the exchange correlation within the valence electron density. So this is, of course, an approximation. So to make sure that we are not actually confusing ourselves, we did the second approximation, which is two ways of doing it, by subtracting out, I will show you later, exchange correlation, the total exchange correlation minus the exchange only in the Hartree-Fock for the core states to get the valence. So if this is valid, then the difference between the total exchange correlation with the total density and the Hartree-Fock exchange will produce the same answer, because we know in the core states correlation are very small.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
This first formula is decomposing the quasi-particle wave functions onto the Chamorro orbitals, right?
Yes.
And but, so yeah. You are saying that in practice, can you explain more on
this? Yes, yes. In practice, it was said by Hydrickson that basically this quasi-particle wave function and this one are exactly the same within
99. How general is that?
It's for semiconductor. Yeah, they did it for semiconductor.
You expect it to be true in more
general? No, system? I don't think so. I mean, I think maybe in a big, you know, system which are already a little bit more correlated, that this is statement is maybe not valid as 100%.
It's a rather surprising
statement. It is a surprising statement. But I mean, on one hand, I mean, you can say, well, I mean, I do perturbation theory and I don't care. I mean, also, I mean, as I told you, you do Concham sigma minus V, and you say this is small, and I do first order, I can do second order. But there is another way of solving it also. It's energy dependent quasi-particle, and then you solve it, like Savrasov does it for DMFT, maybe. I mean, calculate the thing. Okay, I mean, then practical scheme is just, you see here that you have the quasi-particle energy, and you have it on this side. Basically, you can start from LDA, and you do iterative work. But if you just do a Taylor expansion of these things around the LDA value, you can show that this is the difference between this energy is just some normalization factor, which is just the Taylor expansion of that factor. You can get there, and now you have the LDA value that you can evaluate at, because you know this value in advance, and then you take the difference. Usually, this delta sigma AF is less than zero, so this factor actually is less than one.
Your covalence problem, is that really a small one? I mean, you said it's small because the correlation of the covalence is small. What you also actually do with this transparent LDA or GGA, you haven't corrected yourself with the action. And the GW to some extent corrects for that. The certain action is pretty strong in the correlation, right?
How can you say that? I mean, you expect, I mean, that the correlation is small. The part, correlation part.
Right.
Is the we know that. I mean,
the set interaction, which is also corrected in the sigma, but not really in the VXC. We can discuss it later.
Yeah, okay, we can discuss it later. I mean, yeah, okay. Well, I'm going to show you the results, what we got. I mean, in the two, we call them decoupling schemes because we are not doing the full Green's function. So this is basically, we call it the Hartree-Fock decoupling, and this is LDA, in the sense that we are using only the valence exchange correlation. So this is get to quasi-particle 1 and the quasi-particle 2. You see here that you are using the total density, the total exchange correlation, minus the core exchange. So basically, if you close your eyes, you say this difference actually is actually this one. But it's not sure, because you have to do really a calculation to find out. And that's what we did, I mean, the calculation based on these two. And then you see that if you look at this difference here, and this one, this part here, and this one, you will see there is just a shift actually between these two. They are not exactly the same, but they are shifted. And that we didn't care, because what we do in practice is actually, since it's not self-consistent calculation, we take the self-real part minus the valence, the top of valence states, so we normalize all the states at the gamma 25V valence of whatever is silicon, for example. So if you do that, then this shift, which is actually in the difference, actually will go away, and then you get values which are very close to each other, within this, you know, very 0.05 electron volt. So it's pretty good. So now we do also the plasmon pole model. So as I tell you, in a simple version is you just take singularity at the plasmon poles, and you have parameters that you have to get from the static dielectric function. If you put omega equals zero, and you use the sum rules, this is a simple version of sum rules, but you have to use the Johnson sum rules with the local field and stuff. then you can get the parameter of the, your model. And there are many model, von der Linden and Horsch and Engel Farid and many others done. And basically those models, they give you more or less the same quasi-particle energies, for again for silicon. And we tested also for other semiconductors. Then, as I told you before, we did the direct calculation using the RPA dielectric function, not the plasma pole, integrated, and then we did this it's called the PADE approximant by doing integrating on the imaginary frequencies and then continue to the real axis. So you can get the self energy directly, actually omega dependent, which doesn't cost you much more than if you do just for a single frequency. So basically, look at the calculations. They are really almost indiscernible. You see, the values are very close to each other. I mean, that means that actually, at least, we are sure that our calculation is correct. Then we can calculate all energy. So you can calculate, for example, the quasi-particle of silicon. You compare it to the photo emission. Angular photo emission, you can see the agreement is pretty good. And LDA, by the way, gives you this already, which is pretty good. It's only the gap here, but it's not good. You see that, or for example, for some KCL, you see you get only the gap also correct, but also this state is moved downwards, and actually it's agreement with experiment. It's not simply that you are shifting everything, but you are also correcting some valence states, which are core-like. This is coming back to Matthias' thing, is that actually maybe the LDA with this exchange correlation part is not describing this one. And maybe this is just Hartree-Fock-like states. So you basically, LDA doesn't give it right, and GW gives it very good. And you see that actually this is a big band gap, because LDA gives you 4.75 and GW gives you 8. Experiment is 869, so we are very close.
This is non-self-consistent.
This is non-self-consistent. This is just G0. And what people can do more than G0 is actually updating what's called updating the Green's function by the quasi-particle energies. And that seems always to improve, actually. We never find a case where this is didn't improve the calculation going the correct way. But there's no just.
It's in principle not defined. If you just fix the energy zero, the GW calculation at the top of the valence band.
Yes, exactly. So you basically put your energy on top of that one. And then. But in principle, if you do a calculation which is rigorous, which is self consistent and everything, I mean, your quasi particle should be the values. I mean, should be. Because it's all electron, you don't have any parameter, that's what it should be. And the experiment is better be top on top of that, if nature wants to obey the equations of the quasi-particle. Maybe not. Again, if you look at LEF, also we get exactly the same story with the K I don't remember. You get the shift downwards and you get shift upwards. And again, look at the gap 8 and LDA. GW gives you almost 14 electron volt, and experiment is 14. The bandwidth also of the 2p states is a little bit corrected by GW calculations. And if you look to all the band gap of semiconductor or any insulator, actually, it comes out very good, except some of them, like gallium arsenide, and this one we didn't understand yet. I mean, our calculation gives 1 electron volt, basically. Where the experiment is telling us is 1.5. So basically, all of them, you know, the gaps are getting close to this red line, showing you that basically you are going through all these small band gaps to a very large band of load of 14 electron volt. So basically, you are exploring all semiconductor, the very insulating materials to the simple. Semiconductor like silicon. So you see that LDA black and GW blue is shifted up in higher energy. I think what am I doing? I think I.
You mean
Well, basically, this also you can, with this PADI approximant, you calculate the self-energy without no cost. I mean, I'm just showing that the real part and imaginary part you can get, real part and imaginary part, and then you calculate spectral functions of silicon, for example, and many. Now we are now exploring this, how to calculate spectral functions and so on. And you calculate lifetime of quasi-particles, basically, at the gap, you find that the lifetime is infinite, and then when you go out, and it decreases. Well, then later we use this to calculate optical properties, and I think I will not talk about that. And if somebody is interested, I just want to go to the conclusions. So basically what we are saying is GW with the PEW method gives you more or less good quasi-particle energies. Well, we use this to calculate optical properties, and they come out using beta-Salpeter equation to be very nice. So the outlooks, what we are going to do is basically do the full Green's function and also try to describe more complex system and making the calculation cheaper. The other thing is we try to maybe with community here, the DMFT, to do GW DMFT. And the nice thing is about this, we do a lot AS spectra in our laboratory, so we would like to see whether we can extend this beta-Salpeter, you know, interaction, electron-hole interaction, to describe the X-ray absorption spectra. Silke Biermann will talk about GW using DMFT. Thank you.
Questions?
Yes, I mean there is this coup and yes.
So can well, maybe question and they ask about self-consistence.
Yeah, I mean there is this coup person. They did the LRPW calculation. They believe is self-consistent and the gap is reduced when they use the full Green's function and the self-consistency. We cannot confirm or not confirm this calculation, but based on our decoupling scheme that we used already, we see that there is not much change in the quasi-particle energies, but we don't know the effect of self-consistency.
So your G is not self-consistent?
No, it's not self-consistent G.
Some other question?
I mean, typically, to what reason ever? Probably to no reason. But the sigma, the self-energy is usually very little k-dependent. Now, I saw in one of your figures the lithium fluoride. I felt there was quite some k-dependence.
Yeah, there is. There are many cases there is a k-dependence, yes. Why shouldn't be a k-dependent?
No, I think it should be, but in all the calculations I've seen published, it was very little.
Actually, there is. We did now some other compounds like LEF, LEH, and so on, the hydrides. They are actually k-dependent a lot, actually.
But Matthias asked an interesting question. So you can confirm that there is a case where k-dependence
yes,
is less.
Absolutely, yes. Yes.
Okay, well, yeah, what about spin polarized version?
We are doing
can
it.
Can you do?
Yes, we are doing it.
Actually. Iron and nickel.
Yeah. I mean, the aim is to do it for metals, and that's what we want to spin polarization. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh. I don't know if that's a question from Meb or from you or from Sasha, but what is this business that the self energy is very weakly K dependent from GW calculations? For which materials is that? I'm just very ignorant. It's a very innocent question.
In most tests, also it still work well on semiconductors.
Semiconductor, yeah.
Yeah,
for semiconductor, it seems that it's actually pretty much, I mean, within 0.2 or 0.3 dispersion, it's basically almost not.
There are a lot of system and there are a lot of GW calculation.
Yeah. I mean, for all semiconductors.
No, it was this huge calculation for hydrides, yeah? Huge GW calculation, and the one experimentalist in Netherlands just looking at it. But this is just a simple Caesar operator.
So,
But then that also, for these systems at least, explain your thing that the quasi-particle wave functions coincide with the Cohen-Sham wave functions, because that means we can think of sigma just as a potential.
Yes, you could view that that way. For those systems, I mean, we are not, I mean...
I think you better should not think about it this way, because I think in most cases, if you have a lot of
Well, hopefully.
Yeah,
I mean, this observation comes to me as a bit of a surprise. So.
Okay. This is just a stupid experimentalist question. So I'm really wondering, like lithium fluoride, it's a nice ionic crystal, so you have almost spherical charge distribution. So I would think if you just assume local density, then you would get the behavior that is experimentally reproduced. So the question I have
is what kind of behavior? It depends. I mean, what
like the energy gap or something like that. So what is the physical reason that LDA underestimates the band gap so drastically?
I think it's overscreened. That's overscreening. I mean, we show that you see that in Hartree Fock, when you don't put any screening, you get very large gaps compared to experiment. When you do LDA, you get a small gap. Basically, what you are saying, basically, is that the convection states, in principle, they see a shallower potential, but what you put in LDA, LDA put a very high potential, and that attracts the convection state, basically, towards the valence state.
You had some examples where the LDA gap was too large, not too small.
No, they're always too small.
Well, Hartree Fock. Generally, it's the case, but I thought that there was one of the pictures.
No, but of course it's a good question. There is some system where LDA give a perfect band gap.
Yeah.
So what happens in GW?
I think this is LDA. I mean, those are LDAs, all of them. They are all small.
But I think the reason why LDA is doing probably 90% of the reason, and that comes to your question, is really the problem of self-interaction, which is not corrected in the exchange correlation functionals which we use. If you go to screened or exact exchange, you get basically the right band gap.
Yeah, it's true, but also...
Or to optimize effective potentials.
Yeah, I mean, you are using the same potential, the conduction state are viewing exactly the same potential as the valence are viewing. And that's not right in principle. Because,
no, I'm not saying this is the whole story.
You know,
but
if you look at the shells, I mean,
basically why in this case of lithium fluoride?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I have another question. Imaginary part, lifetime. Have you looked at that?
I showed you basically quickly, because this is, I mean, work in progress. We calculate now the self energy, the whole frequency real imaginary part, because you are within RPA. And then this is for silicon, for example, lifetime. And there's 1 over T, 1 over tau here, K dependent. And then you can see that actually the lifetime is decreasing once you go to the lower valence or the upper one. Here you expect actually the quasi-particle to be 100% there. But here you lose weight, I mean, when you go through.
Did you try to do germanium or tin with your method?
No, we didn't do germanium or tin. But if you know, germanium is, well, when we started doing this calculation, the PEW method was not for metals, didn't do metals. Then germanium is a metal within LDA. And because we are using this Carpanello scheme, I mean, we are not able to. But now we are in a point where we can do germanium, actually, because the Carpanello is working for metals.
But in this cluster VMSP, there was this question of causality. So is your self-energy causal, or?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's thank Matt again for basic. So we go on to Mokker related.